15 years ago, I was asked to do a presentation on a lady from Nauvoo, or actually a lady of Mormon history. And so my friend started listing down the names, and she said Elvira Annie Coles. So sitting there and putting it together, Elvira was sealed to Joseph Smith in Nauvoo. All three of her daughters ended up married to a handcart pioneer named Job. Actually, it was a really nice family, so that's not quite as funny a joke as it otherwise could be. And then two of Annie's granddaughters ended up married to John Whitaker Taylor, who was the LDS apostle who got excommunicated because he would not give up polygamy. So as I sat there at 4 o'clock in the morning looking at this, I was like, oh my gosh. And my version of it is that God said, you have to write about these women. And I said, I don't want to. I like being a Mormon. But he kept after me. So I've now written a book that is out for review if you are interested. And I thought, well, I can't talk about 300 pages. What is the nut that I can talk about to help you understand what I've found? Which I don't understand why this story has not been told. Actually, I do understand, and I think you will too when I get done. So I thought, I'm going to talk about Catherine and what she made known. But it was kept very hush-hush at the time. All of the information that I'm talking about is derived from information that was from the 1840s, newspapers, handwritten testimony. So this isn't people coming back years later and saying, oh, this is what I think happened. The scandal of Nauvoo, in 1842, John Bennett got kicked out. There wasn't much said, just the hand of fellowship is withdrawn. Then he went off and said, well, let me tell you, and wrote a bunch of letters in the Sangamo Journal, and then wrote a book where he accused Joseph Smith of all the nasty. And in response, Joseph came back and tried to set the record straight, and a bunch of people tried to say things. Most folks who really get into the detail have assumed that Bennett knew something about Joseph's teachings about celestial marriage. And because of this, they look at what Bennett did and they assume that that somehow reflects on what Joseph was teaching. In my opinion, the truth is much more disturbing on one hand, but on the other hand, it's less disturbing because if you can separate celestial marriage from what Bennett was doing, that's actually really cool. So let's get into it. The outline, I'm going to talk about who Catherine was. When I realized who Catherine was, knowing her involvement with Bennett, I wanted to dig him up and kill him again. Bennett, I'll take you through a little of his development because people typically don't really study him and understand how he got to where he got to. And then we'll talk about the women's testimony and what happened, and then the follow-on from there. So Catherine Lauer, she was born Bertie, Ontario, which is right next to Niagara. The Erie Canal was completed when she was, about 18. And so suddenly you have all this traffic coming back and forth between New York and the Niagara area. So she ends up marrying Josiah Fuller. In the genealogy that I've looked at, it appears that his folks were from the eastern side of New York. So the Erie Canal connection was very important in them actually getting married. About a year later, she appears to have had a son. Because of what happens later, her family isn't quite as well documented as some others. So I'm not sure if it was her son Josiah who was the first child or her son John, who I just discovered yesterday.
Oh, gee.
So her son Benjamin is born in 34 in Kirtland. So it seems pretty likely they were Mormon by this point. She has a daughter, Sarah, in 35. And then, if there was any doubt that they're Mormons, Moroni is born in 1838 in Caldwell. Then they end up in Nauvoo by the 1840 census. And I had wondered, because based on what I'd seen in Family Search and other things, I was like, there's an extra boy here that wasn't in the record sheets. So yesterday I was looking at the 42 census that was done of Nauvoo, and there's a John Fuller. So there's a son that hasn't been in the record books before. So, massacre. They lived in Caldwell County. Shoal Creek or Shoal River, I forget. But they lived in a little village that had a blacksmith shop and a mill. And the mill was owned by Jacob Hahn. In late October, there was a militia of about 250 men that were threatening the village. Went back and forth. Theoretically, there was a truce. And then the 250 men attacked. It was not a nice blacksmith shop like the one that we have down the road there. It was just logs with huge holes, really hardly any cover at all. And if you've read the account of what happened at Hahn's Mill, it's very, very upsetting. Allegedly, some people say that after the militia killed the men and boys, they went on to rape the widows. But other people say, oh, well, that's not really true. Well, okay, so you've just murdered my husband, but thank you for not raping me. I don't know whether or not she was raped in that situation. And this, like I said, this is where I just wanted to kill Bennett. So let's talk about Bennett. He came from the East. He became a medical doctor. But he had a whole lot of stuff going on with him. And by 1840, he got the post of Armorer General for Illinois. And I think that was in June of 1840. As he cast about to think, how am I going to make myself powerful and get in good with folks? Oh, by the way, look at all these people who are showing up in Western Illinois. Illinois obviously is a great and up-and-coming place. So he decides to go hang out in Nauvoo and offer his services because suddenly he's going to be the favorite person to thousands and thousands of persons. Around the time he arrived in Nauvoo, a woman and her child were killed. If you go out into the parking lot, the home was right there in the field next to where the parking lot is here. That family was the family of my ancestor, Jonathan Harriman Holmes. The woman and her child who were killed were very good friends of Emma and Joseph. It doesn't make any sense that a mob from Missouri would come all the way to Nauvoo and kill a shoemaker's wife. So I think they were targeting Emma and Joseph, but they got Marietta instead. This isn't in the history books. What is in the history books? They say, well, we don't understand. Why did they need such a strong charter? Why were they so urgent about this thing? But they knew that Emma and Joseph had almost been killed. They were very aware of how imperiled they were here without having a good charter. We know that Bennett was in Nauvoo by mid-September in a trusted position because in Lucy Mack's journal, when she writes about it, and this has been excised from several versions, so if you happen to have a version you don't find it, it's because people hated Bennett so much they took out this line. But when Joseph Smith Sr. was dying, she said, you know, Joseph's here, the family's here, and we're okay because Bennett is going to make sure that we're safe from the mobs. He was the one who wrote up the city charter that would both address the imminent threat that they had, also would put in for a legion. Why not a university? Bennett was great for putting up universities. And he went off to Springfield to pass it. Apparently, right before he went off to Springfield, he got himself baptized. So he comes back, having done this, as has been discussed in some of the other sessions. There was this great meeting on January 19th. What was that weird name? Dodeska Sesquicentennial? Anyway.
Bicentennial.
Yeah, that word, which I hoped I would remember, but I don't. So Bennett was honored as this great person, and in Doctrine and Covenants 124, in the LDS version of the Doctrine and Covenants, he's blessed, and he's told, if you heed counsel, you will be great because of your love and all this stuff. No, none of us read, that's such a long thing, nobody ever reads that one. But he had fallen in love, and around 175 years ago from today, Joseph Smith gets a letter that said, by the way, this dude Bennett that you trust so much, he has a wife and children that he has abandoned out east, and he's a crap and a nasty. So Joseph was often accused of horrible things, so he's not immediately just going to chop his head off or anything like that. And he sends George Miller, who in that big long section that none of us read, had been assigned to build the Nauvoo House and the temple, and the Pineries discussion, and he was a big part of that. He was sent away from that mission temporarily on special assignment to go find out what's the deal with John Bennett. And he writes a letter in March 2nd, where he says, yeah, there's a wife. She will not grant him a divorce. There are kids. Basically said he's a horrible, awful person. But remember, he'd been baptized, and baptism washes away stuff, supposedly, one hopes, right? So the one remaining problem is that Bennett wasn't available to be courting a young woman, so Joseph ended the courtship. A few months later, Hiram stumbles across the same fact about Bennett, he and William Law, and they write a letter, but Joseph already knew about this by that point. So Bennett could have just been a good guy and kept his pants buttoned up, and life would have been great, but no. One thing to understand about him, though, when you read the stories, he was trained in treating people, specifically treating female problems. And in those days, we heard about the miasma thing. People didn't believe that skin-on-skin contact caused disease. They didn't believe in germs. They didn't think that sticking an implement into somebody's body would cause a problem. And they thought that women, poor women, they would suffer because of the hystera, or the uterus. And it was like a little animal. It would wander around the body, causing blockages. And if you weren't properly being regulated, it would get all dry and light. You read articles or ads from the time, and women are, and men are advertising of taking care of blockages. And what this meant is you could go down to the local person, and they would massage you and call the uterus home so it would be properly seated and lubricated. This was, I mean, royalty would do this before going to the opera for the night. It was not a weird and skanky thing. But this was part of his kit of tools that he could deploy on behalf of those who were suffering. After his courtship was broken off, he began having a little bit more than just this nice little hysteria treatment with his laundress, Sarah Pratt. He had apparently been hanging out a lot with her. I believe that he probably hadn't actually been inappropriate with her until he was deprived of the hope of being married to the person he loved. This affair was discovered, and from the newspaper in 1844, we know that he was prosecuted July 5th. Apparently 60 men were in this room when he and Frances Higby were accused of all the nasty. So it was well known, although Sarah's husband apparently was never told what had happened before he came home. And Sarah's husband was Apostle Orson Pratt. So the women, I'm not really going to go into the whole Bennett, what he says about Joseph and how Orson almost committed suicide, having to choose between the religion that he loved so much and a wife that, if he believed what Joseph was saying, his wife had been just a horrible adulteress. These are other women. So the testimonies, victims and informants. Bennett, he knew Sarah's husband was going to be coming home. He had to figure out what to do about the fact that he kind of liked to have a good time. And it just ballooned because he was the mayor. He was one of the highest ranking generals in the Legion. And unfortunately, he chose to cover his sin and clothe it in, this is okay and you can do it too, type of language. There was a widespread network, and to go into how broad the network of sexual intrigue had become by the time Joseph learned about it is not, that's too big to talk about today. But certainly by December of 41, Joseph had been informed. But he didn't know who was in charge or how it came to be or how many people were involved. He and Emma together embarked on a comprehensive campaign teaching that you had to be moral and rejecting spiritual wifery. Usually when Joseph would talk, he would talk to groups of people. It wouldn't get written down. We only actually know about his sermons decrying the immorality because of these women's testimony. They said, the reason that I'm coming forward, I was told it was okay, but I know, I heard Joseph Smith preaching against it, and it is wrong, and I'm coming forward to confess. We know about Emma's campaign because she was often doing it in conjunction with the Relief Society. And those notes were being written down. So people who don't know about these details, they think Emma was fighting against Joseph and plural marriage, but that's there was not actually a division between the two on this particular point. So finally, by May, there were so many things that were going on. They actually did the 1842 census in part to make sure that everyone knew their duty and to get a list. Because who does a census in a 2 year? Nobody. Not in America, anyway. They stood up the Relief Society, and one of the founding purposes of the Relief Society was to warn the unwary. In May, Joseph got permission to stand up a Masonic lodge, which gave him an opportunity to teach everyone, Mormon and non-Mormon, that they had to be good and righteous. He instituted the endowment in May, and one of the striking things about the endowment is you are not supposed to be doing anything except for appropriate loving thing with your legal spouse. So they had all of these things coming together to try to fight against the teaching that it was okay to just be hinky. Several women came forward and reported that they had been coerced into illicit intercourse during the first few months of 1842, specifically Sarah Circe Miller, who had joined the church in Keokuk and whose husband had died. She came forward, and I have a few of the other names, but we're going to specifically talk about the Nyman sisters. Another time when I just wanted to kill Bennett, or in this case, specifically, I wanted to kill Chauncey Higbee. Nyman, if you don't recognize the name, they were daughters of Jane Nyman. When Joseph gave the sermon about the possibility that people could be baptized posthumously, it was specifically in response to Jane Nyman's pain. Jane Nyman had had a teenage son die without baptism. And clearly, this had been going on for months, where Joseph was aware of how anguished she was that her son was damned to hell. So at the Brunson funeral, Jane was there, and Joseph pointed her out and says, she has been in agony over this. But Paul says, why else are they baptized for the dead if the dead rise? Not at all. So these are Jane's daughters. They were on their way to the school. I mean, they were like 30 and 23 or something like that. So it's not like they were young kids. But they were on their way to the school, and Chauncey Higbee was accompanying them. And he said, hey, how about let's go over to Catherine's house? And once they got there, he urged them very hard to say, hey, it's okay to have illicit intercourse. It's a great thing. You feel good. I feel good. There's no harm in it. Everybody's doing it. Matilda actually held out. I think she's the younger one. And it wasn't until William Smith told her, oh, yeah, this is a good thing to do, that she finally gave up hope that this was wrong and allowed herself to be seduced. I'm related to Sam Taylor. There's some stuff where in the newspaper it says, it's just too disgusting, we just can't write it. And Sam, with his head being where his head was, he said, well, it must have been homosexuality, because I can't imagine what was so disgusting about sex. I love Sam. But anyway, so he's the one that introduced the idea that there was homosexuality going on in Nauvoo. Matilda, in the testimony, she said, I know Catherine Fuller is guilty of the same thing I was doing because she and Bennett were there and I saw them in the act. So what I think the disgusting thing that people wouldn't write in the newspaper is that it wasn't just that adultery was happening, but it was happening in view of the other people. So Catherine had confessed earlier than the Nyman sisters, but then with what had happened when the Nyman sisters confessed, Catherine gets pulled back in. And it's like, okay, exactly who... exactly when, what are you talking about, why did you do it, and it goes back and forth. She said in one of these many pages where she's talking about what had happened, she said, nearly a year ago I became acquainted with John C. Bennett. So that puts it at about June of 41. Couldn't have been much later. And that fits with some other things that were going on with Bennett. So on his third visit to her house, he proposed illicit intercourse. They argued with it a lot. She said, I'm a widow, but I don't do that. And then it's going back and forth. He says, it's okay. He says, there's better people than you who do it, and it's fine. Well, he was talking about Sarah Pratt. Just about anybody other than Emma Smith could have been told, oh, better people than you were doing it, and it's fine. And finally, she got to her last thing where she said, well, if I become pregnant and have a child and I'm not married, it will bring shame on the church. And Bennett said, don't worry. I'm a doctor. I can take care of these things. And Catherine wrote, I understood that he would give medicine to prevent the pregnancy. So it wasn't surgery that he was doing with people. It was probably Queen Anne's lace. But they didn't write down exactly what the medicine was. But we have a couple of the women who talk about the medicine thing. By mid-July, not only had she slept with Bennett, but George Thatcher stopped by her house and said, hey, you, me, let's do it. And she went ahead. So that's why I said it must have been in June that the thing with Bennett first started happening. Partial list, the strikers, the mayor, Chauncey Higbee, who was the aide-de-camp and son of Elias Higbee, the judge. Joel S. Mile. This asterisk means that we know they actually succeeded in having sex with the woman who was confessing. George Thatcher. Jacob Bakenstos, who was not a member. He was sympathetic to the Mormons, but he was never a member of the Mormon Church, and he was the sheriff of Hancock County. Gustavus Hills, who was a Nauvoo alderman. Justice Morris. Lyman O. Littlefield. Darwin Chase, who was a 70. William Smith, who was an apostle and brother of Joseph Smith. Some people are like, well, why do you think this wasn't what Joseph was teaching? Well, there was no ceremony, there was no covenant. And hello, when did Joseph ever say everybody could get in a room and get hanky together? He never said that was okay. The women were expected to yield to many men. As I mentioned, some of them weren't even Mormon, some of the women weren't even Mormon. Everything that you read about what Bennett was doing, it was about sex and avoiding getting caught. There was never any hint that he was promising a eternal benefit from what he was doing. It was just about physical gratification. And how could they possibly succeed? Because some of the people that I think got temporarily involved in this are people that we honor, and people will say, oh, I can't believe that so-and-so would have ever gotten involved. Well, one is they were being told their betters were doing it. A lot of them were widows or orphans or new converts who had nothing, and they were being promised food in exchange. And some of the men who were being persuaded to do it, I think this was being offered as basically, oh, you know, they need help. This is a way to help them. There was medicine to prevent pregnancy, and as we see across world history, when pregnancy isn't a risk, sexuality gets kind of interesting. There were a lot of high-profile individuals involved in this and preaching it and spreading it. And starting in at least August of 41, they were saying that Joseph was behind the teaching of this doctrine. He was not, but they were claiming that. And once William Smith started going around saying, oh, yeah, it's a good thing to do. If it's Joseph's own brother saying that it's okay, it's understandable why people would have gone along with it. So denouement. For Catherine and her family, she decided to end her involvement with the seducers in April and married William Warren. The morning of her marriage, William Smith came and tried really, really, really hard to get her to break off her plans to get married so that he could have access to her and promised to take her on and protect her and provide her with food and everything. But she persisted and married Warren. As far as I can tell, her family withdrew from the Mormon community in the years following, particularly Moroni. In the next, 20 years, when you see records of him, he doesn't admit that he lived in places where Mormons had lived. And the way his name gets spelled is not Moroni. It's variations on that. If it had just been the name variations, I might have said maybe somebody heard it wrong, but the fact that he lied about where he was born is a clue that he was trying to hide that he had any associations with Mormons. One cool thing, though, is decades later, I think it's the 1880 census, looking up William Warren, he's living with the Fuller boys. I love to just imagine the warmth in the family that they were able to have. Despite all the terrible things that had happened, that William Warren came in was really a good guy. Another thing is, you may have seen a picture of the millstone from Hans Mill with the writing saying this is where they were buried. That was Moroni Fuller. He went back to Hans Mill, found what had happened, and he was the one who put the millstone on to honor his father. unfortunately, then in the mid-1900s, somebody who didn't understand the history moved it. So we now do not know where that well was, where all the bodies were buried. The other woman, Margaret Nyman, she leaves the Mormon community. Matilda isn't even listed in Family Search. The only mention that she's a member of the family is in a list of Jane's children that somebody has added on. I have no idea what happened to her. Now, women who were not publicly exposed remained within the Mormon community. Mary Clift is one who, in the secret, in the High Council minutes, she is very explicit about what happened and how she was seduced. But she was never publicly outed as having been involved with the seducers. Mary Munjar is one who was refused entry into the Relief Society, and that where in the testimony it says that some suspicious-looking things were happening. We don't have explicit testimony from her, but she's an example of what happened. If they found somebody who was inappropriately involved, if they could handle it, they handled it, and they didn't ever take it to a point where it would be documented. There are many, many other people where there's a hint that they had been touched by this, but we would start arguing, and that would be a whole other thing. Bennett, he didn't actually learn about celestial marriage until the fall of 43. He writes an article in the local newspaper where he's at, where he kind of describes it. And the language kind of hints that he's trying to make fun of it. But December 43, he comes back to Nauvoo. And we know he interacted with Joseph because he gave Joseph $117, which Joseph wrote down in the daybook as being $3 per week rent for 39 weeks. I think Bennett was trying to repent and just said, you know, these are monies I got for lying about you, and at least I can do is give you the money. And Joseph said, shh, okay. And Bennett bought a bag of flour. There was a friend of mine or a colleague of mine who didn't believe me. I said, well, you know, it's in the book, the biography of Bennett. Go, you can go look it up because you're actually in Salt Lake and I'm not. So she came back and said, oh, yep, and he bought a bag of flour. In spring of 44, Bennett books Marlboro Hall in Boston, and he starts it off by confessing that he had been guilty of gross misconduct. And then he gets a little sidetracked. He says, yeah, but there were other people, and they never got punished. I was the only one that got punished. The audience starts throwing things, and they chase him off the stage, chase him through the streets. Bennett's biographer indicates that if it hadn't have been for the police protection, he probably would have been killed. And he doesn't try after that to set the record straight. He just leaves it the way it is. For Joseph and Emma, Joseph Smith would covenant with dozens of women, including my ancestor, and many of those would go on to testify that they had covenanted with Joseph during his lifetime. When you say marriage, people assume sex was involved. And it's not that I think that he necessarily never consummated those marriages, but I think that was more the exception than the rule. And if anybody wants to argue about the 12 people that allegedly absolutely had sex with Joseph, I will go toe-to-toe with you. We now can do DNA research. None of the children who had, of the very few children who had been believed to be engendered by Joseph Smith, can be confirmed. Obviously, if some of the children died before they had children of their own, we can't really test that. There's not a single case where they've come in and said, yep, he really was. An interesting thing is none of the women who didn't have legal husbands got pregnant. So since when did having a legal husband become the thing that made you become pregnant? Only because the legal husband was the father in every case that we can pin that down. An interesting thing from my standpoint is there were dozens of guys who had become plural husbands during Joseph's lifetime. Only two of the wives of those polygamists had children during Joseph's lifetime. And both of those children were conceived in April of 42. So it's like there was a very tiny window after the bad stuff had happened where Joseph thought it was going to be okay to restore the idea that celestial marriage could involve plural marriage. So like there's that 1 month. And then they found out that this was a much bigger nasty than they had anticipated. This is a few of the references. Why I think this is important is that we have the internet now, and everybody and their brother can get online, and there's just a huge number of people who say, Joseph Smith was a skank. And so for any of us who aren't in favor of that particular viewpoint, mm-hmm. being able to understand why there was so much secrecy and why the terrible things were being said helps us understand. When I started this out, I kind of was uncomfortable with Joseph Smith. I liked him, but I was uncomfortable. And after the research I've done, I agree with what John Taylor said, that Joseph Smith has done more for the salvation of mankind, save Jesus Christ, than anyone else on this earth. With that, I'll close, and we will both get up here and ask for questions.